scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Hey, happy Friday. Let's get it going. It is Friday, May 2nd, and we are underway on this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Steinberg, Vickers of NHL.com. From our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Vix.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
You all right over there?
A little nervous.
Why?
I know what's coming up here, and then I'm like, okay, what's on my checklist of things to do?
Oh.
Suddenly my mind started processing all the stuff I need to get accomplished in the next 48 hours. That's the deer in the headlights panic look.
A little humble brag over here.
Not humble at all.
Man,
just
so
a straight brag.
I had so much to do before my trip to Europe that's paid for. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm going to have to, like, fold up like 7 pairs of jorts, and I'm gonna have to.
That's what my wife is for. She's the expert packer.
Is she really?
Oh yeah,
I can see that.
But thanks for making fun of me on my way out. That's very charming of you.
It's very on brand.
It is very on brand.
We jest because this is our final day for a while with Aaron Vickers on the show. It'll be a steady diet of Steinberg, unfortunately, with some West sprinkled in to cut the Steinberg. But Vix is off Sunday.
Sunday.
To the World Championship, which gets going next week in Copenhagen and Herning, Denmark. Copenhagen, Sweden.
Stockholm.
Copenhagen, Denmark is not where this is.
That's not an actual place as far as I'm aware.
Copenhagen, Denmark is a place.
Copenhagen, Sweden.
Did I say Copenhagen, Sweden?
Yes.
I meant Stockholm, Sweden.
Yes.
Stockholm, Sweden is a place. It's the capital of Sweden, and that's one of the two places the World Championship is going on. The other is Herning, Denmark. I got it right finally. Okay, so here's the deal. Because it's our final day with Vix, he's our world championship expert.
He correspondent.
Is our, and expert. And he is our draft expert, our Flames Talk draft expert. He covers the Flames for NHL.com. So I thought we'd do a segment on some of the off-season burning questions that we've got. As May is underway, as a week is coming to an end, I thought a burning question segment would be the way to go. Many of these questions that could be answered over the next month or so while AV is not with us and is off gallivanting and working in Europe. I've got a few questions, burning questions, but if you've got any world championship questions, draft questions, Flames-related questions for Mr. Vickers and I, and you want him to tackle, kind of like a mini little mailbag for burning questions over the next 20, 25 minutes at 960 on the text line. If you're listening live, get them in right now. Would love to hear from you on what some of your questions might be, some of your Flames-burning questions on AV's final day. So I've got a few, and my first one doesn't count as a burning question, but so what is the flight plan? Like, where are we going? So what's the itin?
Calgary to Heathrow.
So Calgary to London.
6-hour layover.
Woof.
Then London to Copenhagen, where I'm actually starting the tournament. I'm taking a
Copenhagen, Sweden or Copenhagen, Denmark?
The one in Denmark.
Okay.
I'll double check the ticket just to make sure. But no, I'm going to take 2 or 3 days before
Billy
the tournament
starts.
Billy him or
Billy me? Is your name Billy too? No, that's why I'm so confused.
And then a train to Herning to kick off the tournament. Okay, so I'll be on the USA, Czechia, Denmark side of the pool to kick things off. And then 5 days into the tournament and relocate to Stockholm.
So I'm really hoping then for your sake that Zane Parekh plays really well in those two pre-tournament games that he'll get into in Vienna and Budapest. And then you're able to... Do we like it when I say Budapest? I don't.
No,
I don't,
very Ibiza of you. Barcelona.
Barcelona, Ibiza. Budapest.
I wasn't going to call you out on that one because, like, of the three, that's the least offensive to me.
No, I'm going to start.
But
I'll say it Budapest. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't
it's one of my favorite places in Europe, by the way.
I don't say Barcelona. Nor do I say Ibiza. Or Melbourne.
Melbourne?
Oh, you talk to anybody who's been to Australia before. They're like, oh, no, we don't call it Melbourne. You call it Melbourne. No, that's what Australians call it because they have an accent.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a big thing. And then Australians get mad at you because, no, mate, it's Melbourne. You're like, no, it's Melbourne. The guy's name is Lord Melbourne. It wasn't Lord Melbourne. It's Lord Melbourne. I digress.
I don't think you do.
That's a story for another day. Let's get to it. So that I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And great spots for you to go. I don't know about Herning, Denmark. But
I'm not. I hope the tourist board doesn't come after me for this.
They're not,
but if you have a chance to go or not go, maybe the latter.
So you'd recommend Copenhagen instead?
Oh yeah, hey? Copenhagen all day.
Okay,
Herning. I mean, you could even go to Aarhus in Denmark ahead of Herning. If I'm not mistaken, the actual like Legoland is there.
In Herning?
No, in Aarhus.
Oh, in Aarhus. Okay.
I don't know how they say it there specifically. Maybe Aarhus. But I'm not going to get into an Ibiza conversation with you about Aarhus.
I might go back to Barcelona this summer. We'll see.
We are so off the rails.
Somebody then texts in, how do you say Toronto? Toronto.
Toronto.
Well, I don't say it like that.
No, I don't. But that's what they're suggesting.
Nor do I say Toronto. It's Toronto. Calgary? Toronto?
Calgary.
Regina? No, that's not how you pronounce it. Okay, we got some texts coming in at 960-960. Some burning questions for Vix and I on AV's final day. Here's my first one. And then, you know what, maybe we'll skip some of mine because tons are coming in. But who are you looking forward to watching most? What Flames player are you looking forward to watching most at the World Championship?
I'll preface this with two things. One, as it stands right now, I'm personally not anticipating Zane Parekh playing tournament games. I can see him playing pre-tournament games. I can see him remaining with the team and practicing and sort of being a designated non-roster player that if something happens, he's able to be activated. So for the sake of me not saying Zane Parekh, please don't text in and say, what about Zane Parekh? So for me, the second caveat would be you learn a lot about young players at this tournament. And I think back to the first time I was there in 2017, Travis Konecny and Braden Point were on a line together. And this was before Braden Point had popped. Same with Konecny, but Point the following season had 32 goals, 66 points, and really developed into the guy that we know who he is now. So in that sort of ilk, I'm very curious to see what Adam Klapka does at the World Championship.
Okay.
You have to think it's an expanded role, although we did see him on the top line here in Calgary to close out the season. He's one of only 21 Czech players to play a game in the NHL this season. One of 16 forwards, ninth in points per game among them at 0.32. Like, to me, he's one of those candidates like Martin Pospisil was a year ago to step into a primetime role with his country. Now, they're going to have a lot of quality NHLers. They're defending World Championship. They won in Prague last year on home ice. But all these things I sort of trickled down.
Which was pretty neat.
Which is probably the top sporting thing I've ever been a part of. Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, in all fairness, like the extent that I have to compare for NHL playoff hockey is
that's
a couple short Flames runs.
Game seven, against Dallas was pretty neat.
But had that been game seven of the Stanley Cup, like far and away, it was round one. So it's graded on a scale a little bit for
pretty
me.
Good. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good reminder how important that event is in that part of the world. It's an also-ran event for many people over here, but not the case.
To put it into perspective, 2 years ago when Latvia won their first ever bronze, there were somewhere around 250,000 people in the square in Riga.
For third place.
For third place. And that was a square that probably fit 60,000 to 80,000 people. Like, you walk through it all tournament, it's not empty, but it's not full, and then all of a sudden they win. Or in Prague, I pulled an all-nighter and flew out of Prague at 6 a.m. right after the tournament ended. While I'm waiting for the train to go out, there are people partying in the streets still at 5 a.m., 4 a.m., celebrating this victory. Pretty sure it was a national holiday the next day. Can't really. And the famous square in Prague, of course, was absolutely just lit right up all night. So it's a big deal to Europeans, and the fact that Klapka's playing on the defending world champions, I'm curious to see what role and how he can take sort of his development year over year, where he goes. And for the same sort of reason, Sam Honzik, I'm curious to see where he's slotted for Slovakia and what he can do. Last time we saw him in the NHL, he had an amazing training camp, and then his play fell off a little bit, spent the year in the AHL.
Got injured.
Yeah. I'm curious to see him on the international ice too.
Let's get right to it on the text line. My questions are good, but
that's too bad. I had a banger of a draft segment here too.
Well, there's some draft questions in here. Maybe I'll sprinkle in some of mine. We'll see. But this says, guys, what would it take for the Flames to get into the top five of the draft? It's just so rare that we see that happen. And to get into the top five of the NHL draft, like, I think that it would take more than
what
Rasmus
worth?
Anderson yeah. and a first round pick, right? And I know that that's one. Well, like, what about target team A or B? Put Rasmus Anderson in the conversation, add one of Calgary's two first round picks, and could that get them into the top five? Like, usually, if you want to get into the top five, you've got to have a top five pick. You know, like, like, if you want to get number two, you better have number four or something like that. Like, it is so hard. It happens so rarely in this day and age where, like, what Brian Burke did in 1999, that doesn't happen. Like, that goes down. I think that you can put what Brian Burke did as the GM of the Vancouver Canucks when he secured Daniel and Henrik Sedin and was able to do all the gymnastics he had to do to get the number two and three overall pick that year. That goes down as maybe one of the top five largest trades and just most difficult trades to pull off in the history of the league, because it happens so rarely. And as we have progressed over the last 25 plus years since then, it has become and was, as the salary cap has become a part of our everyday reality for the past two decades, it has become that much more difficult to pry top five picks out of teams who have got them. And what, 99% of the time you'll hear teams say, yeah, we're open to trading pick number X. And inevitably, they always make it. Because who is going to be able to, if you can, and I'll give you a perfect example. The LA Kings never wanted to be bad. They got the number two overall pick. And it's like, well, we're not getting Lafreniere. Do we want Byfield? Well, I mean, they took Byfield. Like, they were, I don't want to say they were actively shopping that pick, but
they weren't not listening.
They weren't not listening. And yet, what did they end up doing? They ended up selecting Quinton Byfield, which, you know, I know we're a little mad at Quinton Byfield in this city right now, but
chip it.
It's not just his fault. Jim Hiller, you have got some significant blame to take for this as well, but I more often than not, teams are going to make their, far, 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 far more often than not, teams are going to make their picks. It's too hard. So I don't know if the Flames have what it takes this year to move into the top five.
My tongue-in-cheek answer is you have to win the lottery first and then do something. But if you're at five and six, there's a negligible difference, so you wouldn't even bother making that move. That's the short answer, is you have a 0.5% chance of winning the lottery. You can only move up 10 spots if you win the lottery. Flames will be 16th, so that would get them to six if they win. 0.5% chance is probably the most likely of opportunities to do so.
Okay, this is one of mine.
Okay.
Because I actually have this one down, so you open the door, so now I have to. If the Flames win the draft lottery on Monday, which you will hear on Flames Talk, here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, on the Flames Talk podcast feed. If the Flames win the draft lottery and move up to number six overall, because they are now seventh overall? Whatever. No, because they would be 16th right now. They would be 16th of their pick. So if they moved up to number six overall and kept their pick, who should they be picking at number six overall?
First of all, it's non-negotiable that it's got to be a center.
Okay. What center should the Flames select at number six if they win the draft?
I say that because it's got to be best player available. But at the same time, this draft is so rich with centers that it's going to be a center. You need a center. Everything lines up for it to be a center. Tops of my list is Caleb Desnoyers out of the queue.
Okay.
He's a guy, I don't know where we'll have him in our final ranking. I've personally got him four. I think I'm probably one of his biggest boosters when it comes to where he should be. Saw him at the Hlinka at Canada's camp and then at the Hlinka. And I was like, okay, this guy is legit. He was absolutely everything you'd want out of a center, showcasing what he can in an August tournament. It's not like this tournament is in season. So you're kind of playing a little bit of disjointed hockey. But even there, I thought I might have undersold his offensive ability a little bit, because he's a very strong two-way player. Very, very heady, just as good in the defensive zone as in the offensive zone. I think sometimes players that are like that in their draft year get punished a little bit because they get the two-way tag as opposed to the high-end offensive tag. He was still tops in the queue in points per game among draft-eligible players. And I'm reading between lines here. I don't have this as fact, but I do believe he was playing hurt at the tail end of the season, and he was still, I'd go and get video views of him, and he blew me away with his offensive instinct and ability and playmaking and all that. I liken him to somewhere around a Sean Couturier type, but low key, I think his potential can be a Patrice Bergeron type player. So he's the guy I would target
Caleb
first.
Caleb Desnoyer.
Yeah. I do wonder if James Haggins out of Boston College slides a little bit. He's kind of universally the number three guy behind Misa and Schaefer. I do, like, there's some spider sense tingling that he might be a guy that slides to 4, 5, 6, kind of like we saw to a lesser degree Shane Wright sliding from potentially being a number one to four a few years ago. He reminds me a little bit of Nazem Kadri in the way that he deploys his skills on the offensive side of the ice. If you're looking, again, these aren't direct comparisons. These aren't, this guy's going to be a 33 goal scorer and at age 34 and so on and so forth. This is just stylistic sort of comparisons. Haggins would be a guy that's on my radar. I know we had Steven Ellis on a few days ago, and he mentioned rumblings of Brady Martin going top five. That's a little too rich for me, even though I absolutely love Brady Martin and him and Jake O'Brien. Jake O'Brien was the one that got the boost first, but seeing them both at the Hellenic and then seeing them progress throughout the year, O'Brien had a massive amount of points playing on a stacked team, and Martin didn't necessarily have that. Martin's having an outstanding U18s and opening some eyes. Those two players in and around that 5-6 range is a little too much for me. And then the sleeper for me is Anton Frundell, who joined Sweden in the U18s after his team won championship in Sweden, second division. He played wing primarily in that second division. That's playing against men's second highest tier of pro hockey in Sweden, but he profiles more as a center. He'd be a guy that I'd be looking at as well.
This says, do the Flames on 960, do the Flames have any interest in trying to recoup their pick from the Habs, or do they try and go higher? Now, assuming they don't win the draft lottery, then yes, they would be transferring their pick, which would be either 16th or 15th overall. I guess it would be...
It would be 16.
Yeah.
Anyway. If they don't win.
Yeah, you're right.
Because nobody can jump them from behind
that's right.
The lottery. They're the last team to qualify for the lottery.
That's right, because New Jersey made the playoffs. Right. That's right. So yeah, they'll get 16th overall. So, no, I don't think that getting another pick, because they're still going to, like, regardless, they have two first-round picks. So as of right now, on May 2nd, they have three first-round picks. They've got theirs, they've got New Jersey's, and they've got Florida's. But once the draft order is determined, then we will find out whether or not the Flames, or which of the two picks the Flames will keep, because one of those picks, either theirs or Florida's, transfers to Montreal as part of the Sean Monahan trade. If the Flames win the draft lottery, which they have a very slim half a percent chance of doing, then they will transfer Florida's pick to Montreal, whatever that ends up being, because then their pick would be in the top 10. If they don't win the draft lottery, then it is a guarantee their pick will end up transferring to Montreal. And I know there's a few questions that have come in about that. That's why the draft lottery still matters, because that it's not until the final draft order is set that you determine which of Calgary's picks or which of the picks owned by Calgary transfers to the Montreal Canadiens. So that's why the draft lottery is still relevant. To answer the question, though, no, I don't see them trying to recoup an additional first round pick. I don't see them
specifically targeting
if there's another trade
to happen and a first round pick
if
is
all
involved,
of a sudden Rasmus Anderson, somebody's like hot and heavy for Raz at the draft, and you can get a first round pick, and of course all day, every day, but I don't think that's something the Flames are expressly trying to do, because they still will have two first-round picks.
Agreed, and I'll just add the info of Calgary's pick is top 10 protected that would go to Montreal. That's why the results of the draft lottery matter in terms of which one gets transferred over to the Montreal Canadiens.
I like that. That's if the Flames win the draft lottery, they keep that pick. If they don't, their pick transfers to Montreal. So I know it is all very, 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 very confusing.
Lots of ins and outs.
Lots of minutiae that we get wrong, too. So it's not like we're experts on it. This says, Vix, do you see a center at the draft worth trading down for that, or do you see any other target worth trading for, and what do you think it would cost? I think it means trading up for, like trading lower in the numbers.
Yeah, like moving back in the draft from 16 to 21, roughly. Is that what you're saying, or are you thinking moving up?
I'm guessing trading, like moving up into, you know, jumping from 16 to 12 something like that.
I mean, if Desnoyers, I don't know if that would necessarily count as a full-on slide, because, I'm just higher on him, and like even in our spring ranking, we had Desnoyers at number 5. But if he slides to 8, 9, 10, I would be very interested in grabbing him. Same thing with Hagans. Again, I don't think Hagans is going to slide near that far. I think he's going to just be a 1, 2, 3 spots based from the consensus sliding. Other than that, like you've got, I'd be okay waiting. If you're drafting 16, there's probably 4, 5, or 6 different centers, whether that's Potter at that point, whether it's Jake O'Brien at that point, whether we're talking about Martin again, or I'm trying to remember the player's name, Cole McKinney from the National Team Development Program. Like there are options. If you don't move up in the draft, that doesn't mean you're not going to be able to grab a guy that might actually have some top 6 potential down the road.
This says, would you be open to trading Hanzek and the 2 first this year to move up into the top 10? I'm looking at teams like Anaheim at 8, Buffalo at 7. They already have a good amount of young players, prospects they feel comfortable building around. That range could get you a player like Roger McQueen if he slips, or someone like Jake O'Brien. Here would be my pushback on that text. Fair question. But my pushback on that text would be, you're right, both the Ducks and Sabres have, you know, the Ducks have got McTavish and Carlson and Gauthier, and they've got a nice group of Zellweger, so on.
They need more veterans than they do.
But I don't know
first rounders.
Like, okay, so I think what this is asking is Hanzek and say number 18 and number 23 get you. Could those three things get you number 7? I don't know if 2 lower first round picks and another prospect who we're not sure what he's going to be is going to get you the better player from a team like Anaheim or Buffalo. I don't think they're looking for more. Like, I think if I'm Kevin Adams or if I'm Pat Verbeek with the Sabres and Ducks respectively, and my choice is, you know, drafting a Hagans or drafting a McQueen or somebody like that, or O'Brien or whoever might be there, say that you're number 7 and the Sabres, and you're like, okay, I've got a choice to draft Roger McQueen of the Wheat Kings or pick up 3 pieces that are all future pieces. There's, even though this is a team that is looking to take another step and finally get back to the playoffs, I still don't think I'm taking 3 lottery tickets for one that's got a better chance of hitting at this point, at this stage of the game.
And to be perfectly honest, if I'm the Flames, I would probably rather have that 16th and that second lottery ticket and draft 2 centers and see if one of them sort of exceeds their draft position. Like, for me, and I know McQueen is the example here, or an O'Brien, to me, and this might speak more to me not being as excited about Roger McQueen, but I don't think the drop-off of Roger McQueen at 7 or 8 is significant enough to not take, like, again, Martin's trending up, so who knows where his draft stock is, but like, I'd be okay with a Cullen Potter, even though they profile very, very differently, or a Braden Coutts or a Cole Reschny. Like, I wouldn't force this. This isn't the year to force assets out the door to try to get to 7, 8, 9.
So you think that you wouldn't do that if you're the Flames?
I wouldn't do that if I'm the Flames.
Would you do it if you're the Sabres or Ducks?
No.
So you wouldn't do it on
either. You know what? Well played, Patrick. I wouldn't do it on either. Like, if I'm the Ducks specifically, I'm done with young players. I've got enough in the system. I've got enough on my NHL roster. I need, to be honest, I need vets like Rasmus Anderson, for example. And that's not me trading Rasmus Anderson to the Ducks, but that's what they're looking for at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And the Buffalo Sabres, yeah, they're not interested in 3 more assets that might take 2 to 3 years to develop.
And the other thing that's important, like if you're like, well, trade Rasmus for number 8 overall, number 7 overall. Well, Ducks don't need any more veteran D with Gudas and Trouba.
They've got 4 or 5 U23 yeah, defensemen, 100%. either on their roster, on the AHL roster, or coming, that you run into a similar situation that you have in Calgary, where you've got an influx of young defensemen.
And for the Sabres, like, Buffalo's not acquiring Rasmus Anderson unless they know he's signing there. And I don't know if Buffalo's the place Rasmus is signing long-term. That's all. And you know, I don't say this as taking a pot shot, because Calgary has also been a spot that players haven't been as keen to sign long-term. But if you're a year away from unrestricted free agency, are you signing in one of the smallest markets in the NHL that hasn't made the playoffs since 1986? And you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if Buffalo is the spot that Well, put Rasmus it, is signing long term.
Put it this way: if Rasmus Anderson hits free agency, yes, the term and the dollars are going to be different, but it wouldn't surprise me if he gets 20 different offers. Okay. So suddenly Buffalo doesn't become that attractive.
Last one. Yes or no? Speaking of which, when you return to North America, when you go wheels down at Pearson or YYC.
YYC,
or,
only okay. direct, bud. Come on.
You're flying to London and then to Copenhagen.
Because there's no direct to Copenhagen.
Only direct.
There's no, I'm not going to take a two-leg flight from London.
Could have taken a PJ.
I didn't get traded from Philly.
That's a good point. When your wheels down at YYC at the end of May, is Rasmus Anderson still a member of the Flames?
Yes.
Good stuff. Good stuff on the text line. Some burning questions for Vix on his final day as we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, the Edmonton Oilers did it on Thursday night. After falling down 0-2 in their series to the LA Kings and providing all kinds of hope for people in Western Canada, they then rattled off four straight wins. And with a 6-4 win in Game 6 on Thursday night at home in at Rogers Place, the Oilers are back to round two and a rematch with the Vegas Golden Knights from two seasons ago, where the Oilers lost that series in round number two as well. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. And, you know, as much as we don't enjoy watching the Oilers win playoff series, we do enjoy talking to Edmonton's greatest export. We say hello to Tom Gazzola of Edmonton Sports Talk on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Edmonton's greatest export, the only permanent resident of downtown Edmonton, and our good buddy. Hi, Tommy. How are we doing?
Blessings and good tidings from beautiful downtown Edmonton. Guys, I was shirtless on my balcony high atop Ice District overlooking God's country. And I tell you what, there's a lot of happy people, evidently not outside, not inside downtown Edmonton, but clearly outside downtown Edmonton, Patrick, according to you. And good to hear from Aaron, too. I miss Vickers. He's a
yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Not sure you needed to drop the shirtless part, but I appreciate you painting the picture for
really?
Us.
I like that. It's really taking us behind the curtain.
Guys, you give the people what they want, and that is shirtless me overlooking them. But there's nobody like you said. Just the pigeons flying around.
Pat's got a cure for that. You guys can talk about that off
air. I am a pigeon. I am a pigeon-ridden expert. You just you dial me up. You can dial me up anytime, Gazzola.
That's why you're the best.
Hey, look, and be honest, the Oilers go down 0-2, and, you know, I know they mounted the comeback in game one, but all things considered, they lost pretty soundly at Crypto.com Arena in those first two games and then roar back with four in a row. But at 0-2 and the series coming back to the Alberta Capital, what was your, like, honestly, what were your thoughts about where this series was going?
Yeah, In all seriousness, I did think that there was still hope for the team. Now, if you ask fans around here, not a chance, right? They thought that this was it, gloom and doom. The Kings, all the talk around LA was how much different they are this year, how much better they are, how much deeper they are. Vezina caliber goaltender. And, you know, you respect that and you take it in and you go, okay, let's process it. And I think, you know, going back to that 0-2 situation that the Oilers were in, the seeds of doubt, Patty and Aaron, I think, have been planted after game one, even though the Oilers lost that 1-6-5. It was a crazy game, but the way they came back against the Kings, I think, kind of was a bit of an aha for the team, especially that it really wasn't a different Kings team. And the Oilers could kind of impose their will offensively against them. And even though Darcy Kemper had a fantastic season, they could still get to him. And I think that's where the cracks kind of started too, from a Kings standpoint. But, you know, they go into LA for game two. Kings, it was a close game for the most part, and then the Kings kind of ran away with it. They scored, I think it was like three goals in a four-minute span and ended up being a lopsided victory. So, you know, on the surface, that 2-0 situation looked bad, but I think there was a sense of hope that Edmonton could turn the series around because of what they were able to do in game one. And then, you know, we saw the results of that. They rattled off four straight wins. So, you know, outside noise wasn't good. I think internally the Oilers knew that there was a chance and they were able to expose the Kings the rest of the way.
So what changed? What was different in games 3 through 6 compared to the first two games?
Yeah, and those, don't get me wrong, those games here in Edmonton, 3 and 4, were not masterpieces by the Oilers. I mean, the Kings led through four games for like everything but 29 minutes. Edmonton had the lead for 29 minutes heading into game 5. So the Oilers got a bit healthier, right? They got John Klingberg back, who's been a bit of a revelation, surprisingly. Evander Kane came back. Trent Frederick is looking better and better every game. And they hung in there in games 3 and 4, and they had a couple of miracle comebacks, and they got the win in OT as well with Evan Bouchard play the hero. And so they did get some fortuitous bounces. And I think that's really where you started to feel that this thing was gaining momentum and it was building up. And then the other thing, like we've been talking about it all day for the last, you know, day and a half, 2 days, actually, I'd say most of the week, to be honest with you, when Jim Hiller challenged that Evander Kane goal for, you know, interference, I know we collectively, fans, media, people in the NHL, don't have a clue what interference is game in, game out, but I think that one was pretty clear. It wasn't goalie interference. And when he challenged, they took that penalty because it clearly wasn't goalie interference, and the Oilers scored 10 seconds later. Evan Bouchard from Leon Draisaitl. I think that really put the Kings on their heels, and that was a huge turning point. So, you know, the Oilers had to get lucky. They took advantage of a coach that maybe got a little too, I don't know if it's aggressive, careless, but he clearly made the wrong choice. And he blew up on our good buddy Dennis Bernstein after a loss, and he had to apologize to DB. And it just, that's when the cracks really started to get worse and worse for the Kings, and the Oilers just kept kind of pounding away at LA and eventually walked away with a win in the sixth game. So it was crazy. Like, there's a bunch of things that just worked out for the Oilers. And ultimately, guys, the Kings were the same team that we saw the last three seasons prior to this one in the playoffs.
We're chatting with Tom Gazzola of Edmonton Sports Talk. He's joining us here on Flames Talk on this Friday. Okay. Can you give us a little bit of a, I don't know, give us the rough timeline and the chronological order of Calvin Pickard being on the goaltending scrap heap and maybe never playing another NHL game again, to rattling off four straight wins and being a massive reason why the Oilers were able to turn this thing around.
Yeah, he's a great story, Patty. And he's also an awesome guy. Seriously, like a legit awesome guy. He bounced around. He's supposed to be the Avs goalie of the future. They had some terrible seasons. It led to MacKinnon obviously getting there, Rantanen as well, and they were able to turn it around. But he was, like you said, scraps, and he kind of bounced around. He ended up in Detroit, Toronto. I think he was with Philly for a little bit, and eventually the Oilers they signed him to be the third stringer down in Bakersfield when they had Jack Campbell come in, and that was supposed to be the Oilers' savior in goal. And they had a young Stuart Skinner that they'd quietly and methodically been developing. And so Pickard was basically an insurance policy to have down on the farm. And Campbell, you know, his situation went from bad to worse in you know, just over a year, basically. And they had to call Pickard up, and every chance he had to get in net, he was just solid. Like, it wasn't like he was outstanding. It wasn't like he was this crazy gem that they had uncovered. It was just like, oh, yeah, he was good. He made the saves that they needed. He kind of has an unorthodox style. You know, we jokingly call him a great street hockey goalie up here. and he got the job done. And he was endearing towards his teammates. He's great, like I said, to talk to media-wise. And whenever Stu Skinner faltered, you know, you could kind of rely on Calvin Pickard to go in there and give you an honest effort. And most times it ended up with a good result. So when Stu had his struggles this year, Pickard went in there, gave them some solid net mining. It wasn't always pretty. And it was, you know, he was getting about one start every four games. And then Skinner got hurt when Rantanen kind of collided with him later in the season, just after the trade deadline. And basically it was Pickard's net. And he was really good for them at a time when the Oilers were dealing with a ton of injuries, won a bunch of games, stole a couple games, and that kind of built up his confidence. And then, you know, Stu comes back for the last two games of the regular season. He looked okay, and he's still, you know, their quote-unquote starter goalie that they want to ride with going forward, but he faltered in the first two games, as did the team. I mean, he got hung out to dry, and the Oilers defensively in games one and two were just putrid, for lack of a better term, and unfortunately, Stu got the yank, and, you know, they tried to switch things up and go with Calvin Pickard, and he's just been steady. And to his credit, he's kind of risen to cult hero status here, and he's earned the net for the start of the Golden Knights series.
That's going to be the million-dollar question, is when you look at Vegas's roster, both up front and on the blue line with the offensive talent they have, can Pickard keep this up against the Golden Knights?
Yeah, I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be okay, Aaron, but it'll depend on a couple of things. Like, he'll get you that key save at the right time. He did that yesterday. He did that in the games prior. But there have been times where he does get caved in, and teams have blown him up for, you know, five or six, and he has to get yanked. So he's not immune to that. And if he is successful against Vegas, especially early in the series when it will be his net for sure, I think he's going to need better defense in front of him. And that's not just the defense men. That's the five-man unit in front of him, because, I mean, there's a penchant from Oilers forwards to, you know, get caught pulling off TV turns rather than stopping and starting, maybe being a little bit slow on back checks, rough through the neutral zone, a little sloppy through the neutral zone. And, like, even yesterday, you look at Darnell Nurse on a couple of those goals, like, his gap control at times is questionable. Sometimes he's trying to make up for a mistake that Evan Bouchard has made, and you know, so it could be kind of wild in front of the goalies. And so I think Pickard will need to make some key saves, but I think he'll need to get some help from the guys in front of him as a five-man unit. If that happens, then the Oilers should, in theory, be okay. If it doesn't, then he needs to stand on his head. Otherwise, he's going to be sitting opening the gate and watching Stu Skinner go to work.
What's the sentiment amongst the fan base right now on Stuart Skinner? And is there any apprehension if the Oilers have to turn back to him in the next series?
A lot.
Okay.
They are just, he is the guy in the crosshairs no matter what. There's nights where we're joking on the post-game show that he doesn't even play, and we're like, well, man, Stu really to blame for this one. And like, Matt Cassian likes to joke about it. But it's funny. And then, like, because we do our shows and we put it on YouTube as well as, you know, iHeart, all that stuff. But we get an AI-generated chat summary because we get hundreds of people talking all at once in this chat. And even if it's a Calvin Pickard start, it'll be like, Oilers fans are commenting and blaming goaltender Stuart Skinner for a poor performance once again. And we're always just like, what the hell's going on with some of these fans? But yeah, he's fallen out of favor. I think, you know, the vocal minority was on his case earlier in the year, and I think a lot of people gave him the benefit of the doubt after the Oilers, you know, went to Game 7 with him last year, the Cup Final. He was an all-star a couple years ago, Calder finalist. He just finished up. This is his third full season in the NHL. He's still relatively young, and, you know, there's peaks and valleys that come with being a young goaltender with a team that takes a lot of risks offensively and can be a little bit porous defensively at times. And yeah, once the Oilers fan base got their sights set on Stu Skinner, he can't shake it. You know, there were some nights where he was outstanding, and, you know, people would still be like, why didn't he make that save in the second period? That was a brutal goal. And then you go back and you watch the film, and it's like, well, there was three breakdowns in front of him, and he stopped the first two, and the third one went in. But I guess you're right. Blame Stu for it. But then there have been times, and you know, we talk about Pickard making timely saves and key times in games when the Oilers need it most. You know, Stu has had moments where he let that goal in, and sometimes it was a weak one. There were early goals this year that got to him. And I'll say it, he seemed rattled sometimes. So definitely a setback this season, but the Oilers fans, you know how harsh they can be. Oil country is rowdy, and Stu takes the brunt of it most nights.
Any chance Ekholm's back for round two, or we're still long term on a return for Matthias Ekholm?
Yeah, that would be super wishful thinking. People were asking that last night, looking ahead to this series, and basically I summed it up like this: unless hockey Jesus, guys, descends from the hockey heavens and blesses Matthias Ekholm and brings him back to full health, we're not going to see him for this round. And you know, I like to make light of it, but the guy, he's really dinged up. And I know, you know, there's some reports that he's, you know, tracking well and progressing, and maybe he'll be available later in the playoffs. But if we see him this post or in this series, it would be a miracle in my books, which is too bad because he's an outstanding defenseman, great guy. And they could certainly use him, but no, don't expect to see him in this series.
Doesn't Hockey Jesus just wear 97?
Yeah, a few people have said that. Others have said it's Bob Stauffer, but I can't tell the difference between the two, right?
I would have given my vote to Tom Gazzola, but...
Me too.
Oh, I'm like the hockey court jester of this city. Let's not kid ourselves, guys.
But tarps off, so that's all that really matters.
That's right. You give the people what they want.
Well, you know what? I think there's going to be more people moving to downtown Edmonton now that they know that's where you live. So.
Real estate bump.
No, keep them away. I like having it all to myself, except for on game nights. It's very cozy.
You know what? I continue to give downtown Edmonton credit. It has come a long, long way in the last decade. And now it can attract heavy hitters like
local celebs
bustling high-rise community. Get out of here, Gazzola. It's awesome chatting with you as always, brother. You're the man. I'm sure we'll check in again numerous times before the postseason comes to an end for the team you cover. So be well, pal. Have a great weekend, hey?
Boys, great to be on here. And tell that guy Mike Gazzola from City News to call his mother. She's worried sick about him, all right?
I will tell Mikey to do just that. Bye, buddy.
Love it. See you guys.
Love you, Tommy. Tom's brother, Mike, works over at 660 News, City News 660. So I always like to get a good Mike Gazzola barb in there. Mike Gazzola and me, similar in many ways. I can't tell you how on the air. I can't tell you how on the air. Thanks to Tom Gazzola from Edmonton Sports Talk for joining us to wrap up the hour. Aaron Vickers, buddy. Your final hour before the World Championship. Fly safe, buddy. Have fun.
I mean, that's not really up to me.
You know, you wish somebody well, and they give you the... I hope that you land safely.
Thank you.
At London Heathrow, and then at Copenhagen International
Sweden.
In Denmark. Connor Gronsdahl, Cam Hughes are outstanding producers as well. And Tom Gazzola joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.